Whereas offences against property have of late increased in and near the metropolis, and the local establishments of nightly watch and nightly police having been found inadequate to the prevention and detection of crime, and whereas it is expedient to substitute a new and more efficient system of police in lieu of such
Healer,
establishments...
Healer, by Patrick Carroll.
...and nightly police within the...
Episode 1.
...and to constitute an office of police...
Oh, Mr. Peel, what have you done? Your police act don't answer. It will be the cause, I have no doubt, of filling Van Diemen's answer. London now, believe me, sir, is overstruck with queer goats who wish the police act and you were sent to Jimmy Square Toes.
Constables will parade for inspection.
Oh, we have our usual complement of new faces this morning, Sergeant.
So we do have, Inspector. I've become quite accustomed to it.
You'll observe that the orders of the day instruct us to second at one sergeant's party for duty at Westminster tomorrow. I would prefer it to be yours.
Yes, sir. Stand for inspection.
All right. Before this morning's inspection, I'm instructed to read out and post the following notice. The commissioners think it again right to caution every man in the police force at a time when an attempt is made to create a strong prejudice against them that they should do their duty with every possible moderation and forbearance, and that they should not furnish a just ground of complaint against themselves by any misconduct. All right, you may continue, Sergeant.
Sure. The party of constables under my command will tomorrow repair to Westminster. Large crowds are expected as the commissioners anticipate a possible threat to the public order. Constable Atkinson, you will resume your usual beat today, and I wish you to pay particular heed to those coming and going from the Gunmaker's Arms in Eyre Street Hill.
Yes, Sergeant, I shall make sure to look in there.
You will do no such thing. You ought by this time to know your instructions sufficiently well to be aware that you are forbidden to enter any house, and most especially a public house, save at the express wish of the householder. We'll also replace the button with your greatcoat once before commencing duty.
Yes, Sergeant.
Constable Smith, usual duties for you. Smith, step out.
Sir?
You are drunk, Constable.
No, sir.
Do not presume to contradict me, Constable. It's not yet 7 o'clock in the morning and you are drunk.
I'm not, sir. It's only this miserable, cold, damp weather's clogged my head so and turned my eyes already.
A quartern of Geneva or a gallon of port has put the maps in your eyes, or I'm much mistaken.
No, I'm from my soul, Sergeant. I've not had one drop of anything this week past. Well, only one glass of hot rum last night to ease the ague.
Step back, Constable. Sir. Take warning. You are under the strictest observation. Mind my words. Possible Rourke, it's but your second day of duty, and yet you appear to have contracted some dreadful palsy. Keep your head still.
With respect, Sergeant, it's this stock. It's so very iron stiff, a man can't hardly move his head from side to side.
You must address your complaint to the commissioners, or else to the maker, Mr. Moore of Piccadilly, I believe.
Sergeant.
For the present, however, I shall be quite satisfied if you will proceed to your beat, keeping your eyes strictly to the front, and endeavour to do your duty by whatever comes to your attention in that posture.
Yes, Sergeant.
Constable Quinn, you appear to be respectably turned out as usual.
I trust I am, Sergeant.
Except in one particular. What have you in your coat-tail pocket, pray?
My staff, sir.
That's not all, I think.
I have a book as well.
A book, indeed? And what book is that? Your general instructions?
No, sir, it's this book.
This book? The works of Henry Fielding, Esquire. Mm-hmm. With an essay on his life and genius by Arthur Murphy, Esquire. Much any man named Murphy would know a genius. Follow your mate. Containing the first part of the history of Amelia. Mm-hmm. Do you find the possession of novels an indispensable adjunct to the performance of your duty, Squint?
No, Sergeant. However, with respect, as we are required to be in uniform at all times, on duty and off, I find it convenient to have a volume about me for when I am relieved.
You will leave such rubbish in your section house in future.
Yes, sir.
Do you know why we are ordered to Westminster tomorrow, Constable?
For the opening of Parliament, I assume, sir.
Oh, you assume that, do you? Parliament has contrived to open in the past without several score of police to keep order. Now, of course, we must endure the low popish scoundrel O'Connell and Mr. Orator Hunt and the rest of the Democratic Reformist rabble. Yes. Yes. You, I'm told, hold your own views on the question of parliamentary reform.
I do, sir.
And what are they, pray? Or are you ashamed to state them?
I am not, sir. Since you inquire, I am in favour of a moderate reform of the representation.
Moderate reform? As well speak of moderate gunpowder. I'm sure your brother officers will be gratified to know that you are in a measure of sympathy with the mob, who well may be attempting to break their heads before tomorrow is out.
But my brother officers know that I am in no sympathy whatever with anyone who threatens the public peace.
Though you share their opinion.
I shall do my duty as usual, sir.
Mercenary? Damnable? Vile wretches? Peels, bloodthirsty gang. From them we can expect no mercy, for their nature, like that of their founder, is base, blood-seeking, and villainous. Well, well.
And that's a relatively mild example of what's being presently circulated against our people.
It cannot be said that this past summer's revolutionary events on the continent have made our tasks any easier.
Yes, those regrettable upheavals have excited a large and, I fear, ill-disposed section of the populace. And the new police are of their nature our first line of defence against any consequent disturbances. It is a difficult baptism, gentlemen, for you and your men.
We can none of us do anything but our duty, Sir Robert.
Returning to those duties, Sir Robert, are we to take it that you are satisfied with the arrangements made for tomorrow?
Entirely so, Mr. Mayne. Studying over your report, I fail to see what further precautions could possibly be taken, short of cancelling the opening of Parliament altogether, a course which, naturally, could not be contemplated under any circumstances whatever.
Excellent. Then we shall take up no more of the Home Secretary's time, but proceed to put our plans into effect.
Perhaps, before you go, gentlemen, you will allow me to acquaint you with this passage contained in a letter which I have lately received from His Grace the Duke of Wellington. Permit me to congratulate you on the complete success of the police in London. It is impossible to see anything more respectable than they are.
Having been privileged to serve under His Grace during the war against Bonaparte, I am gratified to be assured that our men enjoy his good opinion.
You may depend upon it, Colonel Byrne. Having informed the Duke that the business has given me from first to last more trouble than anything I ever undertook, I also conveyed my personal opinion that his congratulations might with equal justice be directed towards your two selves.
Yet I fear the success of the police in London is not so complete as the Prime Minister is pleased to believe. Leaving aside the criminal element and the political mob, large sections of the populace remain obdurately opposed to our very existence.
That is in a measure true, Mr. Mayne. But, as I've also said to the Prime Minister, the men are gaining knowledge of their duties so rapidly that I am very sanguine of the ultimate result. We really must teach people that liberty does not consist in having your house robbed by organized gangs of thieves and in leaving the principal streets of London in the nightly possession of drunken women and vagabonds.
Sir, that gentleman does not want your banner thrust out of his carriage window. I am telling you, sir, that you might use that flag, so I must take it from you.
Look out! Mind yourself!
To the Reverend Mr. Hodgson, St. George's, Hanover Square. Sir, I am desired by the Commissioners of Police to acquaint you that John Hall, recommended by you for employment in the police force, has absconded with his uniform and all his appointments, yours, etc.
Yes, that'll do, Mr. Yardley.
What do you make of this, Colonel? I've been through these others, Mr. Yardley, and
The four applications from dismissed constables for reinstatement may be dealt with by Form 7, and I've docketed two further letters requiring Form 9, two Form 4s, and six to be answered by new Form 2. I do not believe we have a form answer for such a letter as that one, Colonel.
It's remarkable. Mr. Yardley, will you take a reply?
Certainly, Colonel.
The Commissioners of Police present their compliments to General Sir John Doyle. And in reply to his note recommending his name, Thomas McCullum, for employment in the Metropolitan Police, beg to acquaint him that there is no situation in the Metropolitan Police in which a man with one arm, however deserving in other respects, could be employed. Yours, etc.
And I think that will be all for the moment, Mr. Yardley.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Sir Robert was naturally constrained from divulging to us any specific indications as to what we may expect, but how do you imagine today's events in Parliament will affect us, Colonel? I refer specifically to the King's speech.
My friend, I shall say nothing of politics for the simple reason that I know nothing.
You can, I fear, anticipate no new political developments likely to lead to any lessening of the present public excitement.
Come, my dear Mayne, let us not distract ourselves with what is beyond our control. Problem by problem, detail by detail, that's the only way to proceed. I'm convinced of it.
I'm sure you're right, Colonel.
Open that damn door!
What's all this? Oh! It's you, is it?
Aye, me, Arthur Jenkins, as ever he was. And what's the door of a public police office doing bolted at this hour of the day?
You cut along out of this or the sergeant will have you in charge.
Will he, by God? You tell him, my old master, Lord Trolls, taken up my case. I'll be back here on duty soon enough. See if I ain't Smith.
If the commissioners was ever so soft as to let you back, your first day will be my last.
Ow! Ow! Don't get me wrong, will you?
Oh, yeah, begging your pardon, I'm sure, Mr. Jenkins.
Oh, and if it ain't Constable Quinn, the young hero of Waterloo. Weren't you neat as usual, Constable?
No need to inquire after you, Mr. Jenkins. About the same as ever.
I don't change much.
Oh, good day to you, Mr. Jenkins!
Lovely, Quinn, you look fair enough to bat.
I've come away on my 2 feet, others weren't so lucky.
Come along, Ugly Cry, Roll Lobster, I can walk, miss.
And where have you got to, Quinn?
Inspector Beale ordered me to the surgeon to have this properly dressed.
Here, Quinn, this letter's been left for you from Mr. Lytton, left not half an hour ago.
Tell me, Smith, who was that tattoo in our door just now?
That ruffian Jenkins, sir. Drunk as usual, and making threats as to how his old master was going to get him his place back.
Sergeant, I would like leave to absent myself from duty for an hour.
An hour? But that's likely to be called back to Westminster at any moment.
If needed, I shall only be a few moments away. Mr. Lytton asked me to call upon him as a matter of urgency.
Mr. Lytton at the vicarage?
Yes, Sergeant.
I see. Oh, very well, Quinn, but... be as quick as you're able.
I will. Thank you, Sergeant.
Ah, Martin, come in. Gracious, you're looking very sorely used.
I have been all day on duty at the Houses of Parliament.
You received my letter, however.
I did. Its tone seemed very urgent.
Just so. Earlier today, I received a communication from Miss Staples.
Miss Staples? Mariah, have you seen her?
I have not. A packet was delivered to me by one of Mr. Staples' servants. In it were a note to myself and a letter addressed to you, which he begged me to forward. That letter is here.
Oh.
I am deeply grieved that correspondence between yourself and Miss Staples should be carried on in this clandestine manner, most especially with myself as intermediary.
But I have held no communication with Miss Staples for the past 12 months and more. Following my last interview with her father, I did not see how I could honourably maintain any contact with her at all.
Staples, wretched man. How can he use you so after all your years of service to him? I say nothing of the infamous treatment he visits on his poor daughter.
I do not honestly believe John Staples to be in command of his own actions.
He is certainly not in command of his own tongue. His behaviour at Vestry 2 nights ago was most shocking.
If you will allow me...
Of course, my friend. The letter. Pray, read on.
Thank you.
My dearest Martin, I'm sure that neither you nor the world will censor me for addressing you thus. In what I both fear and promise will be the last communication to pass between us. A year has passed since the tragic and violent events which terminated relations between yourself and my unhappy father. I regret that time has wrought no change in him. It has become the overwhelming conviction of my mind that there can be no felicitous consummation to the feelings between us. And thus, I feel bound, in some formal manner, to release you from all obligations which our previous intercourse may have led you to feel toward me. I will shortly leave London for a space, and can but hope that the healing touch of time will do its work for me as it has not for my father. In the sincerest hope that you will in future prosper and bear the ending of our old and affectionate friendship with greater fortitude than I can anticipate to find within myself, I am, believe me, your most desolate and loving Maria Staples.
And what, if I do not intrude, does Miss Staples say?
She says that she is leaving London for a time.
And is that all?
That's the burden of her letter.
Upon my soul, the Prime Minister exceeds all bounds. Should he continue in his immoderate obduracy against the mood for reform, he will surely precipitate the revolution that we all dread. Why, his own party were openly dismayed by the tone of his speech.
Indeed, Father. When His Grace took aim at their lordships and assured them that he had never heard or read anything which could satisfy him that the state of the representation could be improved, I declare the Foreign Secretary had as great difficulty in concealing his chagrin as I myself had in suppressing my supreme amusement.
My boy, allow me to observe that while I find much in the Prime Minister's remarks to excite disquiet and distress, I cannot say that amusement formed any considerable part of my reaction.
Oh, come, Father. You are aware that as a general thing I would regard laudanum to be as rousing as a bathe in cold brine when compared to the experience of listening to their lordships' ululations on the subject of reform. But what entertainment could surpass the sight of Lord Grey's face becoming so singularly appropriate to his name, as the Duke told him that the legislature and the system of representation possessed the full and entire confidence of the country? Why, Grimaldi never gave a more droll performance.
You are perverse, sir. I doubt the drollery which you affect to perceive will much strike the public at large.
The mob, you mean? I am sure that when Hunt and O'Connell have set this hare into the streets, the rabble will be after it like coursing hounds.
Yes, thus providing a double setback to our hopes of reasonable reform.
Ah, well, do not let it prey upon your mind, Father. I certainly shan't. And now I fear I must take my leave of you for the present.
Perhaps you will be so good as to dine with us tonight.
Impossible, Father. I have an engagement. Devilish long-standing. Can't be avoided.
I shall at least convey your duty to your mother.
Oh, my duty to Mama, to be sure, Father. To be sure.
Good morning to you, Constable Quinn.
Mr. Morley, you come upon me out of this mist quite like a ghost.
No. Jeremiah Morley remains but flesh and blood. Indeed, perhaps too much so in a matter of the flesh.
You are abroad very early and a long way from Bow Street.
I have a little matter of business which brings me this way. But is not Northampton Square rather out of your way?
A little, yes. My former employer, Mr. Staples, is his house just there on the far side.
I had thought, you will excuse my mentioning the subject, that feelings between yourself and Mr. Staples were not such as would lead you to go out of your way to pass his house. There's another reason, perhaps?
No. The last time Mr. Staples and I met, I am sorry to say, blows were exchanged. It is undoubtedly a foolish thing, but I do not suffer Mr. Staples to imagine that I in any way avoid him on that account.
But
you've not told me what brings you so far afield, Mr. Morley.
Ah. If you will look over my shoulder, Constable, you will observe the premises of Mr. Reed, who has lately set up in business as a printer hereabouts. Are you as yet acquainted with this man?
I have seen him once or twice. He seems respectable enough.
Oh, you gain that impression. An erroneous one, I fear. Have you observed anything of note about Mr. Reed?
Now, curiously, Mr. Morley, I have. The first time I became aware of him as a new occupant of those premises, I chanced to see him handing a remarkably handsome woman into a carriage which was standing outside his door. Both the lady and the equipage were so unusually fashionable for this part of the town that I could not but take notice.
I would stake a large sum on there having been a letter G painted on the side of this fashionable lady's carriage.
Yes.
Mrs. Gascoigne.
Mrs. Gascoigne, but not the notorious courtesan.
Hush, Constable. Do not take all the gossip of the town to be gospel. Now, let me return your attention to the newly established Mr. Reed, who is readily known to those in the circles best acquainted with him as Peter the Screever. Now, the man began as a solicitor's clerk, although he has worked, apparently, for some years as a general hackney writer, journeyman, scrivener, and professional composer of begging letters. He's also been, to my certain knowledge, an embezzler, a forger, and now, I have reason to believe, a conspirator at blackmail. Now, watch him, Constable, if the occasion arises, and report to me anything you might think relevant to my inquiries.
Gladly, my duties permitting. But tell me, Mr. Morley, is yours an official Bow Street inquiry?
No. I'm retained privately in the matter.
Oh, indeed.
Yes. I may also tell you that should there be a successful conclusion to the affair, I expect to be liberally recompensed. And in the event, I shall naturally see that you do not go unrewarded.
I could not think of such a thing. We are under the strictest injunction against accepting any rewards or gratuities whatsoever outside of our official pay. Were I to do so, I should be dismissed instantly.
Your official pay and man's nature being what they are, I cannot admire that as a system for retaining the ablest and most energetic men in the new force. Come be candid. Do you not regret that you did not re-enlist in the army instead?
I do not. In any event, to admit such regrets would show ingratitude to the friend who first put me in the way of applying for my present position.
I need not remind you of our first meeting, I think.
No, indeed. No. No, you do not. The memory of that horrible blaze and the pitiful creatures who died in it haunt my dreams to this hour.
I have never scrupled to say that your conduct on that occasion led me to form the opinion that you were a singularly likely man. And I'm now of the opinion that you are indeed perhaps too likely a man for your present service.
You still do not much admire the new police then, Mr. Morley?
Oh, they're all very well for sweeping away the drunkards and the harlots and for keeping the rabble at bay. But for genuine police work such as we at Bow Street perform, no, they simply won't answer.
And of what does this genuine police work consist?
Oh, well, such a matter has brought me in your way this morning.
Oh, thief-taking.
Oh, I trust you've come a long way since the days of Jonathan Wilde. But the old name will do for me.
There's a difference, Mr. Morley, as between your system and the new one.
Huh? And what is wrong with our system?
Why, what you and Mr. Townsend and the rest of the Bow Street officers do is to try to catch a thief, or at least attempt to get back some of his loot.
Just so. Proper, genuine police work.
Now, it is our business to prevent any robbery taking place and to see that there aren't any loot to recover.
You'll assume prevent original sin.
The first principle laid down for us by Colonel Rowan and Mr. Maine says the primary object of an efficient police force is the prevention of crime.
The first result of that utopia, which depend on it we shall never see, will be the prevention of my livelihood.
What a night of bedlam!
66. That appears to be the final account.
60? I beg your pardon, my dear man.
In the wake of the Prime Minister's judicious remarks to their lordships on the subject of reform, 66 separate assaults upon our men took place overnight.
Oh.
Every magistrate's office in the town is a carousel of rioters. And how have you left the Secretary of State?
Well, as you would imagine, Sir Robert, like ourselves, is in a state of the deepest apprehension.
Am I addressing the commissioners of the Metropolitan Police?
You are, sir. And what can we do
for
you?
I'm really most apologetic, Colonel, Mr. Maine. This gentleman, whose card identifies him as Viscount Troll, is highly insistent that
I have not come to be balked by understrappers. Are you gentlemen the authors of this extremely insulting communication?
If your lordship had done us the honour of requesting an interview in advance, we should perhaps have been at better leisure to attend...
Did you write this letter, sir?
However, as I was about to observe, since you have called, we shall be happy to hear whatever your lordship wishes to communicate.
To what letter do you refer, my lord?
This piece of unexampled impertinence.
The letter is certainly from this office.
If I might intrude, gentlemen, the commissioners will perhaps recall that his lordship wrote to them on behalf of one Arthur Jenkins, who was dismissed from the force some weeks ago. His lordship was most anxious to secure Jenkins' reinstatement.
Yes, I remember the incident perfectly.
The commissioners will also then recall that having decided against Jenkins' reinstatement, they instructed me to convey their decision to his lordship in the usual manner.
The usual manner? The thing is insufferable! Not only shall a gentleman's wishes and recommendations be flouted, but flouted in a form letter.
I am sure that upon reflection your lordship will appreciate that the use of form letters, though perhaps regrettable, is a necessity forced upon us by the pressure of business.
In any case, your lordship, the reinstatement requested could never have been countenanced. Jenkins had proved himself totally unsuitable to his post.
You compound the insult by informing me to my face that I have sponsored the cause of someone totally unsuitable. Really, gentlemen, I call that damned cool.
I assure you, my lord, we have no doubt that your recommendation was made in good faith. And we assume that your lordship cannot have been fully aware of the, no doubt, altered character of former Constable Jenkins.
The cold fact remains, my lord, that Jenkins, as well as being utterly incompetent in his duties, had also made himself unfit for his position by being not only drunk, but actually drinking while on duty.
What of that, sir? If I were to dismiss every servant of mine who took a quart of porter, I should be reduced to blacking my own boots.
I fear the regulations laid down for us by the Secretary of State for the Home Department do not allow us to be so liberal as your lordship.
Damn it, these are mighty stiff regulations for a raggle-taggle gang of blue-coated oats that any Irish navvy or unemployed potboys at liberty to join. I don't doubt, however, that the Home Secretary prefers to keep the patronage in his own hands.
Your lordship is under a misapprehension. There is no patronage connected with the manning of the police establishment.
No patronage?
Oh, Mr. Main is correct. While we are always prepared to consider recommendations from whatever quarter, appointment to and promotion within the police force is based strictly upon merit.
Upon my soul. That's a damned American and democratical system. Let a notion of that sort take hold, and there won't be a gentleman left in England. I am to take it, then, that you will neither reinstate Jenkins, nor apologize for your insulting letter.
We are sincerely grieved that your lordship should construe an insult, for I can assure you none was intended. However, I fear that in the matter of Arthur Jenkins, we are unable to offer your lordship any satisfaction.
Satisfaction? My God, such usage tempts me to demand satisfaction of another kind.
If I take your lordship's meaning correctly, I must inform you that Colonel Rowan and myself are sworn magistrates charged with keeping the King's peace.
Do you know my father, gentlemen?
I have not the honour of Lord Laverton's acquaintance, but I must, of course, be aware of so eminent a gentleman's existence.
He shall hear of this matter, and you shall hear more of it. I promise you that. Promise it faithfully.
Good day, my lord.
The House of Lords! I say, why do you stop? The constable's not in the way, my lord.
Drive on!
Run the infinite current and mud if he just moves.
Hold those horses! The road is blocked at present!
Drive on, I say! Don't you hear my master, Peter? Let loose those horses!
Only when the way is clear!
Sweep that swine out of my road! Daniel! James! Down and out!
I warn you to stand back!
Show one more of that stick against Freeler! Peter!
Thrash him!
Kill him! I'm gonna get it to the man who thinks him dying!
He's mine! He's mine!
My God, Quinn! What's happened?
Murder! Bloody murder has happened!
No!
That was episode one of Peeler by Patrick Carroll, with Mick Ford as Martin Quinn, James Booth as Jeremiah Morley, Norman Jones as Sir Robert Peel, and Richard E. Grant as Lord Troll. Peter Jeffrey played Colonel Rowan, and Killian McKenna, Richard Main. Other parts were played by Joanna Myers, Ronald Herdman, Timothy Bateson, Alan Barker, Mark Straker, James Green, Richard Pierce, Ian Lindsay, and Timothy Carton. The singer was Martin Carthy. Peeler was directed by Janet Whittaker.
You comes in cherries now, lament the Charlies now will queer you. For Mr. Pooh's new watchman will be far too strong to fear you.